Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. For our radio audience, we're glad you all could join us for another great hour. For those joining us online, though, we have another great segment coming up for you. And this is a guest I think you all will really find fascinating. He's celebrating the release of a new book out now. Amos Camille is making his first appearance on our program. He's the author of the book, Great is the Truth, Secrecy, Scandal, and the Quest for Justice at the Horace Mann School. He's a perfect example of something we talk about on this program all the time, and that is how the things that we do, the impact that we make today, how it really can create a ripple effect, you know, on until tomorrow and into the future. An article that he wrote 3 years ago is something that really sparked for a lot of people not only attention to something that was going on, but also made other people stand up and want to be able to tell their stories as well. We're going to talk to Amos not only about the journey of writing this book, but also what it's been like for him to see what's come from it since and what he hopes you're able to take away from it in the aftermath. Amos, hello to you. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you, Cyrus? Thanks for having me.
Hey, glad to have you. And I should say you wrote the book with Sean Elder, and we'll be reminding our audience a little bit later how they can get it for themselves. And like I said, though, Amos, it all began with an article that you wrote 3 years ago. And even in the book, you have individuals who, you know, who wrote to you and said, you know what, because of what you shared, I feel as though I have to say this, or this gave me the courage to be able to come forth. I mean, what has it been like for you to see that just by your being able to do what you believe to be the right thing, to expose what was going on, how it really has continued to have ripple effects?
It's really been a very humbling experience, I have to say. Just about 2 or 3 minutes before I got on the phone with you here, I received a phone call, I'm sorry, an email from a guy who I hadn't heard from since maybe 11th grade. And he said he's been meaning to write me for 3 years after my article, because what I exposed in terms of the sexual abuse at Horace Mann had effects on his life. He had a cousin that had committed suicide, and he only found out recently that that was probably the cause of it. And he was giving a eulogy recently, and he said it's very important now for him to talk out about it and speak out about it. So it's been, as I said, it's been an extremely humbling that, you know, something I wrote just about my four friends has really reverberated around the world.
Right. It's for sure. And it has caused other people, like I said, to be able to come forward, you know, publishing articles in other places like the Daily Beast, as you chronicle in the book. And I should say, you know, not just sexual abuse, but just abuse of power in general. I mean, does it surprise you, though, almost, that, and this is one thing I thought about as I was reading the book, does it surprise you that it took, you know, this many years later, that it took someone like yourself to be able to write what you wrote in 2012, to be able to, in many ways, to get the ball rolling, to get people to take action against something that many people already knew was going on?
I think it enabled people to finally see it. You know, one of the things about, as you say, not just sexual abuse, but abuse of power, is a lot of people think that it only happened to them.
Right.
And while in this case it didn't happen to me, when I did publish, a lot of people came forward and said, oh, this happened to me, this happened to me. And partly because of the age we live in, with the internet and people reaching out across the world, really, and saying, you know, this happened to me. And it's enabling, it's giving voice to power. It's institutions or brands, if you will, are having a harder time controlling their story. So if for decades something was going on, it was able to be buried by the administration, it's no longer, it's a lot harder to do so. And once it's out there, it's that ripple effect that you suggest.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, in the chapter that you actually called Truth Be Told, chapter 12, you talk about, you know, some of the abusers, you know, which, you know, were still living. And you know, you say in the book, in that chapter about going to see one of the dragons. I mean, do you think part of the what makes this so sad is that, and also I think what makes people unfortunately so suspicious almost today is that, you know, the very individuals that are supposed to be there to encourage and inspire and to educate, that those were the very ones who in many ways became the predators and, you know, became, you know, for many of these children, part of their nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the part that's so hard for all of us who sort of lived through it. I was not abused, but many of my friends were. And mm-hmm. one of the things that made Horace Mann such an incredible school and is that part of the education was to go on extracurricular trips to Europe with world-renowned a maestro, right, or a world-renowned musician. And there you go to Europe, and that's exactly the breeding ground for where this happens. And so you have this very strange scenario. We have these amazing professors, and they were also that. They turn people onto lifelong love of music or English or whatever they were teaching, math, et cetera. But they're also doing very monstrous things. And it's I think in the popular imagination, the people who go on to do these things are like, you know, the creepy guy in the raincoat. But it's usually not that person. It's the more successful ones, if you will, are very popular. And part of their grooming process is sort of putting on a show for the parents and the other administrators. Oh, it's a great guy, and that's part of how they gain trust.
Right.
And that's what makes it so scary, for because it's very hard to distinguish, you know, the two. And it's very sad for all the 90%+ of educators and friends who and camp counselors who are not like this.
Exactly. Exactly, and I think that is true. You know, I do a news program here in Mississippi almost, and just yesterday and even today, one of the reports was about even police officers, you know, the thousands who, you know, had been, you know, found to be using their power in an inappropriate way, you know, sexually abusing individuals that they were pulling over and terrorizing individuals, you know, for their own pleasure. And I think that is the thing. I think it takes, though, individuals like yourself to bring these things to the forefront, but also, of course, others to be able to tell their story. I guess, you know, the big thing that I thought about, and I would hope that we would all do this almost, but evidently, of course, we know this is not the case. How did you find the courage to finally do it? I mean, what was it that made 2012 the time that you felt as though you had to address this?
Well, what happened in my case was we went to a school that was, we sort of knew there were strange teachers and watch out for this one and watch out for that one, like high school kids talk about. And that's not a New York thing, that's all over the country, right?
Right.
And, you know, kids talk. About 10 years after I graduated, five of my friends, we went on a camping trip. And where one of the guys at 27 at that point said, you know, something happened to me when we were in eighth grade, and he then told us what happened. And then out of the five people around the campfire, I was the only one that had not been abused. And we all went on with our lives. We had families, and there are some of these guys are very successful, and they go on. And when the Sandusky story broke at Penn State, it was also a football coach who had abused my friends, and I called him. My friend and I called him. I said, "How are you doing?" He said, "I'm not really doing well. I wish somebody would write about it." So the next day, I happened to be on a train to D.C. For 4 hours, and I just started typing what I thought I knew. And when I looked up, I had 27 pages or so of just rantings of, you know, half-remembered innuendo. And then that ultimately became a very well-reported and a well-documented, and many lawyers looked at it and editors. The piece that ultimately ended up in the New York Times. But it was really, to answer your question, of what my friend said to me. He said, "I just wish somebody would write about it," because it had been silent for so long. He was in his late 40s. And once you hear the stories, and once all the stories come pouring forth, it's almost like you're propelled you're energized in a way like, people have to hear this. And so it almost felt like it wasn't me writing it. I just was almost a vehicle or it was just sort of passing through me, and I felt it was a calling at that point.
Yeah, I think that is it. I want to read something that I thought was really powerful in Chapter 8, Mediation is the title of the chapter, and this is what you said about those survivors. For those of you who have the print edition of the book on page 129, some had been abused hundreds of times over a period of years, while others were made to feel uncomfortable after encounters that were sexual in nature. Some had gone to HM when it was still an all-boys school. Others had attended the post-Inky co-ed version. Some had labored for decades under the impression they'd been an abuser's sole target, while others had known they had not been alone. Some had been referring to themselves as survivors for years, while others would be sharing their stories for the first time. Some desperately needed the money, while others were financially successful and just wanted to have their pain acknowledged in order to move on with their lives. Whatever their differences, after decades of silence, they had brought the mighty Horace Mann to the table. After nearly 6 months of crystallizing as a group, telling one another their stories, the moment of truth was at hand. The thing that really struck me that you wrote there was where you said that about them just wanting to have their pain acknowledged. And that seemed to be something that was difficult even for Horace Mann to be able to do, because later on in that same chapter, you actually have what was said actually by one of the individuals that was involved in mediation, where, you know, they realized that something bad had happened, but there wasn't anyone willing to really take responsibility. Do you think that was probably the most difficult thing for some of these survivors, someone not even wanting to acknowledge their pain and what they had gone through?
Absolutely. I think you put your finger exactly on it, Cyrus. I think contrary to popular belief, you know, the institutions will sometimes say, oh, these people are just coming at me for the money. You know, they want a big payday. Most survivors of sexual abuse, a huge number, do not come forward for any monetary gain. They come forward for two reasons mostly. Number one, they want somebody to acknowledge that this actually happened to them when they were a kid. And they want somebody from the institution to apologize. Now, what happened in the case of Horace Mann was sort of a prescriptive for what not to do. If you look at it from a healing perspective, Horace Mann did the opposite. He looked at it solely as a legal matter. All right, how much could we do? How do we get this off the front pages? How do we get these people out the door? And currently, the way that the New York statute of limitations is written, they didn't have to pay anybody anything. In New York, you have until 23 to come forward. It's one of the worst, most stringent laws in the country. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, most people don't talk about it ever. So to ask a 23-year-old is a little bit, it's pretty insane. So 40 or 50 is really when they start to talk about it. But they didn't. Most people don't come forward for the money. They want acknowledgement. And because it was looked at as a legal matter, HM actually did not promote healing. They actually hurt a lot of people many decades later.
Yeah. One of the things that one of the survivors said that also struck me on page 135 that was recorded about that mediation and after the presentation was over, they said, I literally went home and sat in the dark room for 5 hours after what I had heard. And then this is the thing that got me. The psychic and emotional damages were staggering. The school was supposed to be about guiding people toward intelligent and fully realized adulthood. What happened instead was a complete perversion of the school's purpose. And I thought, you know, what a way to be able to articulate what had happened and what the result was. And I think talking about the ripple effects of your article, of course, the ripple effects of what happened, of the abuse, and how it, for many, you know, others could not move forward. And because of that, you know, some would not be able to survive. I mean, when you were not only hearing, you know, these accounts, but also writing Great Is the Truth. I mean, what was your hope for the rest of us? Because, you know, you, of course, were closely connected to this because you knew someone who had been abused. But for the rest of us around the country and around the world who would read this, what was your hope for us that we would realize, you know, about not only the importance of speaking up, but also being able to look after those around us?
Right. I think this happened at a very elite private school in New York City. One of the people that graduated from Horace Mann go on to run media companies and, you know, big businesses and real estate, et cetera. And when I first published the article, I have a friend, he works with gang kids in Los Angeles, and he said, "I'm so happy you wrote about it at the highest levels of society." It took me about 10 or 15 years to understand that almost every single one of my gang kids in L.A. had been sexually abused. And it got me thinking that at the time, this is not about rich or poor or black or white or Catholic or Jewish, Democrat or Republican. The statistics are staggering. If you believe them, there are one out of every four girls and one out of every six boys in America will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. Now, even if those numbers are off by double, right, by 50%, and call it one out of eight and one out of 12, that's a staggering number of adults walking around in silence with all of this trauma. And my hope is that we can talk about it in a way that doesn't put the stigma on the adults that this happens to as kids, and to put the shame where it belongs, on the adults that actually did it to them. And so I hope that, you know, sunlight is the greatest disinfectant, right? And if we can have people openly speak about this, you know, this is something that happened to me when I was a kid. And the more and more people, we realize it's pretty much it's everywhere, right? And again, it's not in New York or just L.A. It's in Mississippi. It's in, you know, I got calls for and emails from literally around the world. This was happening in Japan. This was happening in the Netherlands, Germany, et cetera. So I think by personalizing it with my friends and ultimately my classmates, many of whom I only met after I published, I think it's been able to serve for people to say, wow, there's a lot of this going on around the world, and we need to just be a little bit more aware of it and address it.
Yeah, I think that is an amazing thing. When you were told that you had slayed the dragon, when you were told that about the article, I mean, did you realize at the time almost how big it was and how influential that article would be?
No, you know, it's funny. I was reporting it and just hearing these stories, I would go back to my friends or people I knew I was working on, and I would, you know, go back to my wife and say, you know, I think this thing is going to be bigger than, it's getting kind of big. And I sort of felt it moving towards the front page of the New York Times. It ended up being the cover story. I was unprepared for what happened once it was published. There was over 1,000 comments on the New York Times. They actually shut down the comment section. They were getting so many comments. And it just seemed to strike a chord. As I said before, the numbers are everywhere, right? I mean, if you just take that 1 in 4, 1 in 6 number, there's so many people that can relate to this. And all of a sudden, everything snaps into focus. Oh, that's why so-and-so, all of a sudden, they got very dark around 9th grade. And, you know, and then you start to reevaluate your whole childhood and your whole experience. And that's been very rough for me personally and for many of the people through it, just to say, you know, that's another thing. I love Horace Mann. I love my, changed the course of my life. So it was not easy to talk about.
Sure.
And to ruin a reputation, but I have no regret at this point about it.
Yeah. And I think there is so much gratitude for what you have done. I think because, again, it allows people to know, for one thing, that they matter, what happens to them matters. and that there are other people, you know, that know that they are not alone. And I think that is a big thing, I think, for anyone out there going through something, to know you're not by yourself. What a sigh of relief that is in itself, for them, to know that there are other people who can relate to them, can relate to what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, and what they want. And I think that's the thing. And I think what a great thing for all of us to realize is we are not only reading a book like this, but also just thinking about our impact in life. I also hope that our audience, almost, this is me personally saying this, will then also remember how that just as you were able to make a difference with this article, that every day we have an opportunity to do something good toward those around us and to make a positive impact, not knowing what individuals that we're meeting, what they've gone through and what they're going through. And I think it really, you know, shows that there are, you know, individuals like ourselves, ordinary individuals, that can do amazing things and can have an extraordinary impact. Is that also something that you hope?
Absolutely. I think, you know, as I said, I was surprised at how big it got. But then, you know, if you sort of think about it in these, like, expanding circles, right, so it was, first there was the five of us around the campfire, and then it caught on Horace Mann, and then way beyond it and all around the country and around the world. But as it kept on getting bigger, as you will read in the book, my best friend came out and said, 6 months after I published, that happened to me too at Horace Mann. And so sometimes people are hiding in plain sight. And one of the sort of lines I heard many times through the reporting was, you know, I'm about to tell you something I haven't told my wife. And I heard that a lot. I have never told anybody this. And when my best friend finally told me, you know, we were sitting in my kitchen and I was hugging him and we were both crying. I said, I can't believe this. And I said, does your wife know? And he said, I wasn't even planning on telling you. And this is when, while he watched me report it, he watched all of our friends come out and say this happened to them. It was so tightly locked in there. So to your point, I didn't, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, like, I knew that this was, I'm just humbled by how many people it's been able to affect. And hopefully, he let me tell his story in the book. He really likes the way I told his story, and that to me means a lot, that I was able to handle it with care.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of them, you know, appreciate that, and I think, you know, as many of them now are able to think that now they're going to be able to help people, just by allowing it to be out there, almost, I think that says so much. I mean, and then that burden, they're no longer imprisoned by it. I think that's the other thing.
Right.
And what a great thing to have that freedom, the freedom that only the truth can bring.
Right. Well, he bought a couple of copies for his own kids now, right? And so he that to me was, wow, you know, I'm letting them in on the story, and so hopefully that those kids will not keep anything like this. You know, God forbid something happens to them, but you have to share your pain, and that's the only thing that's the only sort of road towards healing.
Yeah, what a powerful thing. Thank you so much for the time today. Again, everyone, Amos Kamil has been our guest. He's the author with Sean Elder of the book Great is the Truth, Secrecy Scandal, and the Quest for Justice at the Horace Mann School. The book is available through our friends at Amazon.com, so make sure you guys head over there. Amos, is there a website or anything you'd like to give out for our audience to stay connected with you?
Sure. You can go to, it's my name, it's AmosKamil .com, and I have appearances starting all over the country, and I would love to hear from people. I really appreciate your time.
Look, I appreciate yours. Thank you so much for that. I want to thank our good friend, Gail Leander Wright, for setting up this conversation with us for today. And thank you, our radio audience, for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. You all stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come for our online audience, so we are going to lose you. So if you came in late and you missed part of the conversation, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. And Amos is also available on Twitter as well. I've already tagged him with the link on our Twitter page, so you make sure that you're following him as well to stay connected with him there as well. You can find ours at twitter.com/CyrusWeb, and also the link is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/CyrusWeb. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music, as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.